Log Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And Leo. And tonight we're going to, we have a special interview with Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. And it'll be coming up in about 20 minutes. And we discuss the election fraud. Brad Blog is a election watchdog.
For free and transparent elections,
right.
Which we really don't have sight on the election process. We really don't have transparent elections in this country, and he is working toward having that.
And he's been, they established in 2004 after that nightmare. After that, actually, no, they actually started, I think, in 2003 to watch the voting problems as they arose in to report on them in the 2004 election. And we've had Brad on a number of times, and we've been following his...
Yeah, he's really well-informed, and he keeps up on everything.
And, he talked about the 2004, of course, elections, which were a total rip-off, and then 2006 were rip-offs. 2008 are a rip-off, and, it just keeps going and going and going, and there's no way to verify these votes. They're all frauds, the absentee ballots and everything else. It's just a...
And some registrars don't even count
they don't
follow the law.
It's a polluted system. It's absolutely absurd how anybody gets elected in this country. But
he's
anyway...
He's going to talk all about that.
He's going to talk about that, and also about Ann Coulter, her election fraud.
Brad to talk about.
Her voter fraud, and... involving three states. But anyway, we're going to start off.
With a little bit of news. There was one thing that I wanted to read that I didn't get a chance to really share. I don't know whether this was... that wasn't the one. I wanted to read the... There was one on a health issue that I wanted to read about. I have to find that, see if I can find that. Here it is.
I
was very concerned about this.
Very good one, yeah.
And I didn't get a chance to read it on our FM show, and I definitely wanted to read this. This is from electromagnetichealth.org, and this is a concern for all of us. February 10th, 2009, Thomas Rowe, medical director of the world-renowned Paracelsus Clinic in Switzerland, says he's convinced electromagnetic loads lead to cancer, concentration problems, ADD, tinnitus, migraines, insomnia, arrhythmia, Parkinson's, and even back pain. At Paracelsus, cancer patients are now routinely educated in electromagnetic field remediation strategies. And inspectors from the Geopathological Institute of Switzerland are sent to patients' homes to assess electromagnetic field exposures. Of note, Dr. Rowe says a strategy to consider for those experiencing electrical sensitivity symptoms is to remove the electromagnetic hotspot in the head created by the presence of metal fillings. Concern is thus not only for the neurotoxic aspects of mercury and fillings, an increasingly understood hazard, but because fillings themselves act as antennas in the presence of electromagnetic fields from cell phones and cell towers, Wi-Fi networks, portable phones, and other sources of radio frequency radiation. Rose says the removal of dental fillings can be an important early step in reducing electrical sensitivity, allowing some people to live in homes they otherwise could not tolerate. Cultures have shown beneficial bacteria grow more slowly in the presence of electromagnetic fields, says Rowe, allowing pathological organisms to dominate. Thus, a strategy with electrically sensitive patients or those with facing chronic conditions is to aggressive supplementations with probiotics and other biological medicine approaches to balance intestinal flora. Many people with chronic infections linked to EMF exposures, such as Lyme disease, are symptom-free after an aggressive microorganism rebalancing program. Let's see. I just missed something here, I think. Electrical sensitivity, originally known as radio wave sickness, is sometimes a debilitating experience created by these and other dysregulating effects of electromagnetic fields linked to many acute and chronic illness conditions. Electrical sensitivity is a serious emerging public health issue globally and a subject in which doctors have no training. A petition to Congress created by www.electromagnetichealth.org is now circulating on the Internet requesting Congress mandate the FCC lower exposure guidelines to reflect the large body of science showing biological effects of exposure much lower than current standards. Repeal Section 704 of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which rescinded state and local governments' right to resist towers on health or environmental grounds. Number three, stop the rollout of a WiMAX network until Congress better understands the potential health consequences. And number four, accommodate citizens unable to function adequately in high EMF environments, including forbidding cell towers on school properties. Exposing children in schools to radiation, known to impair brain function and learning, Rowe describes as criminal. He said, is it unethical to expose children to electromagnetic load in this way? We know that power stations for electromagnetic waves like mobile phones are hurting the brains of children, so to put such stations into schools is really very, very bad. Rowe says the question is, does the school or does the society really want to have intelligent, well-educated children or not? He says, if you install mobile phone towers which radiate to the children, their intelligence, their brain capacity decreases. You'll have more ADD children, you have less function of the brain, which in the long term reflects on the intelligences of children, of the possibility to teach children, and in the long term, the more this overcomes society, the more we will have dumb children. The reality of the health consequences of electromagnetic radiation eventually will have to be faced, and this will only happen with active pressure on Congress. It is estimated that 3 to 8% of the population in developed countries experiences serious electro-hypersensitivity symptoms today, and 35% experience mild symptoms. With increasing electromagnetic field exposure, these numbers, along with suffering involved for the people who are impacted and the health care costs involved are bound to go up. So, that's it. Something to be really careful about.
You want to read this? This is up your alley here. For,
what's that one?
The 7-year-old kid that had a tantrum.
That's an interesting...
Hospitalized. I thought that was kind of a weird...
Well, there's a lot.
What you thought about that, cause
well, I felt there was a lot missing from that article.
Yeah. Wait, you want to read it?
Well, because I'm not sure it's valid. I just feel like there's a lot missing in this article because.
As far as what?
As what really happened.
Well,
it's so serious. Well, my comments are. Well, I'll read it, and the listeners can make up their own. Police resort to Baker Act for a 7-year-old's tantrum. This is from Largo. TampaBay.com. Police this week removed an unruly 7-year-old from his classroom and forced him to be hospitalized under the state's Baker's Act against the wishes of his outraged parents. The boy spent the night alone at Morton Plant Hospital before he was seen by a child psychologist the next day and discharged. This is total abuse of police power, said the boy's father, Richard Smith, 41. My son has no mental health problems. He's never hurt himself. He's never hurt anyone else. Smith and his wife, Barbara, said they want to consult a lawyer. But Largo Deputy Police Chief John Carroll said his officers did the right thing. By all accounts, the second grader threw a tantrum at Mildred Helms Elementary School on Wednesday. Carroll said the boy tore up the room during his fit. In the process, he stepped on the teacher's foot and batted a school administrator. Carroll said the tantrum was so bad that school officials had to evacuate students from the classroom. That's pretty serious. So School officials called the parents and police. When the officers arrived, they decided the boy needed a mental health examination. This was not the first time the boy had acted up, Carroll said, and the lead officer, Michael Kirkpatrick, decided the boy couldn't just go home again with his mother. He just felt that the young man needed some mental health services he wasn't getting, Carroll explained. The Baker Act is a kind of band-aid that allows us to have somebody introduced to the service providers that it can actually do something for him. Barbara Smith said she could have diffused the situation had the offices let her see her son. Instead, they kept her from him as they conducted the investigation. When the police decided to take him to the hospital, she agreed to ride with the boy in the police car to comfort him. The incident was terrifying to the boy, whose name is not being used. Barbara Smith is keeping the boy and his 9-year-old sister out of school because they are scared to death to go back, she said. The Baker Act allows people to be taken for a mental health examination against their will, but it requires a person show substantial likelihood of causing serious injury to himself or others. Absent that, police cannot use the Baker Act to take someone into custody against their will, even if they think the person needs help, said Rain Johns, who handles Baker Act cases. That's not the purpose of the Baker Act at all, said Johns, who is not involved in the case. Stepping on somebody's foot doesn't rise to the level of substantial bodily harm. Martha Linderman, a Pinellas-based Baker Act expert, that a child can be taken against parents' wishes, but only if he meets all the criteria. John said she has seen children as young as 7 taken into custody under the Baker Act, but it's usually voluntary. Pinellas School's police report that they have been involved in 83 Baker Acts from the beginning of the school year to the start of this week. That does not include any handled by other police agencies.
83 of their kids have been psychiatrically admitted to a hospital.
I guess so.
They must have one freaking weird school there,
mm-hmm.
or I think they're abusing that system.
I don't know. We don't know how many students are in that system or how big it is.
Even if they had 1,000 kids, I mean, 83,
we don't know.
83 of them go.
It might be a city. We don't know, Leo. We don't know the circumstances. It's not a.
But it's one school.
No, 83 in the school district.
Oh, the district.
Pinellas schools. We don't know how
big that is.
So we don't have enough information. School member Peggy O'Shea said she didn't think that sounded like a large number, given the 105,000 students in Pinellas schools.
Okay.
School board member Jenna Clark noted that there were several other Baker Acts in Pinellas schools that day. She plans to raise the issue with the superintendent. School officials said a region superintendent has agreed to meet with the Smiths and the principal. Carroll said that it's not as if police officers enjoy taking kids into custody. We look like big, tough cops with tiny kids, he said. But in the case of this boy, it was justified. The child got interviewed by mental health professionals. He said he didn't get arrested. There are no criminal charges against him. Richard Smith and his wife are not sure of their next step. We just can't sweep this under the carpet, she said. We do want to talk to our lawyer. Our main goal is to make sure this doesn't happen to another family.
Hmm. It was in Florida, too. Wasn't it in Florida a couple years back that they arrested like a 5-year-old girl? Were throwing a tantrum, they handcuffed her and everything and brought her to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And what a freaking, I think that was in Florida too. But that was all over the news headlines when that happened. But I just thought that was kind of weird that they can do this.
This article stated this was not the first time that child's parents had been called because he was throwing a temper tantrum. And it's pretty serious when you have to take everybody else out of the room.
Yeah.
That's how bad it was. He wouldn't stop.
And
you're not allowed to touch them or do anything or restrain them. What are you supposed to do?
Right. True.
And the parent obviously is ineffective in controlling her own child.
Mm.
They already had to do it once.
Mm. That's true.
Now, how are you supposed to teach children if you have a child like that in the classroom?
Right.
I mean, it's very difficult. I mean, you have to think about whether that child really belongs there.
Yeah.
He can't control himself. It's not like he's 3, he's 7.
Excuse me.
So that would be second grade.
Yeah.
But there's a lot left out of that.
Can I start?
Yeah, I just want to say there's a lot that we don't know.
I don't care anymore. I don't really care anymore. The guy got it. The parents are probably nuts too. So I misread it. I thought there was a violation there, but
I don't know.
It doesn't look like it.
We'd have to find out
more.
Anyway.
This is interesting because resolutions to affirm state sovereignty may be prelude to secession. This is from naturalnews.com, which I thought was an odd article for them, but it's an interesting article. And it was written by Barbara Minton. Nine state legislatures have either passed or introduced bills intended to reaffirm their state sovereignty, as laid out in the 9th and 10th Amendments of the Constitution. Another 20 states are expected to introduce similar measures this year. While the ramifications of these resolutions are still uncertain, one thing is clear. People are sick and tired of the federal government's usurpation of power not granted to it by the Constitution. They have had enough of fear-based economic terrorism and underhanded promotions of policies and procedures that bypass public scrutiny and the will of the people. I fully agree. Especially since nobody admitted to reading that entire bill. All right, bailout.
The economic recovery package.
Yeah. And hearing that the Obama administration is pushing for immediate passage of nearly a $1 trillion deficit spending plan without allowing time for legislatures to read the 1,400-page document may be the last straw. Some who have read parts of the package have found it to be slanted toward more democratic support in social welfare programs, as well as laying the groundwork for sweeping health care reform that would be subject to scrutiny and debate by the people. It is time to resurrect the 10th Amendment. The Constitution applies to the federal government. Its sole purpose is to spell out what the federal government can do. Today, even the most casual review of federal government activities make it clear there is very little that it does which is actually authorized by the Constitution. The 10th Amendment states, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. It means that the federal government is authorized to exercise only those powers which are specifically given to it in the Constitution. Right? And the 10th Amendment is despised by those who suck the mother milk of big government because it was drafted to enshrine the Constitution, what the founders and the original states had learned from experience, that small, limited government is the best government. With power grab after power grab, the Congress and the President have disregarded the 10th Amendment. The average American now seems to believe that the mandate to govern resides with the federal government. And apparently the executive branch, as well as the legislators, believe this too. And under the Constitution, the central government has only one mandate, and to protect the inherent rights of the people. Yet the federal government of today seems to have nothing but contempt for the rights of the people. For too long, Americans have allowed their politicians to interpret and bend the rules of the Constitution. This has gone on so long that the unchecked, self-anointed powers of politicians has all owed them to believe that has allowed them to believe that the Constitution is no longer relevant and that they are above any laws. The resolutions reaffirming state sovereignty are the first steps in the attempt to put the federal government back in its place as intended by the Constitution. The text of resolutions reveals the extent of the push for state sovereignty. Some of the resolutions reveal full-blown efforts to regain lost sovereignty. Others appear to be testing the waters as though their state legislatures may be just awakening from a long slumber. Missouri's version takes aim at a specific policy decision made by the Obama administration, the Federal Freedom of Choice Act, a sweeping reform intended to make abortion a legal alternative in all 50 states. And according to the Missouri resolution, whereas the Federal Freedom of Choice Act would nullify all federal or state law enacted, adopted, or implemented before, on, or after the date of enactment, and would effectively permit the state of Missouri from enacting, prevent the state of Missouri from protective measures in the future. The Arizona bill is a broad statement of the right to sovereignty and its ability to supersede any other action, claiming sovereignty under the 10th Amendment. over all powers not otherwise enumerated and granted to the federal government by the Constitution of the United States, that this resolution serves as notice and demand to the federal government as our agent to cease and desist, effective immediately, mandates that are beyond the scope of these constitutionally delegated powers, that all compulsory federal legislation that directs states to comply under threat of civil or criminal penalties or sanctions or requires states to pass legislation or lose federal funding be prohibited or repealed. And New Hampshire Concurrent Resolution 6 is a direct statement of the desire for sweeping change, stating any act by the Congress of the United States, executive order of the President, which assumes a power not delegated to the government of the United States of America by the Constitution, shall constitute a nullification of the Constitution for the United States of America by the federal government. This resolution goes on to state several cases, including further infringement on the rights to bear arms, which would cause the state to invoke these measures. And the resolution from the state of Washington's House Joint Memorial 4009 is less aggressive, but as broad in scope, taking the form of cease and desist warning, which serves as a notice and demand to federal government to maintain the balance of powers where the Constitution of the United States established it, and to cease and desist, effective immediately, any and all mandates that are beyond the scope of its constitutional delegated powers. And it goes on, in the Ron Paul campaign for liberty is a beacon for convergence. Ron Paul advocates complete reinstatement of the Constitution, and a resolution is not a law. A resolution is a statement, not a binding law. Just because these resolutions were proposed does not mean they represent consensus in the state legislature. Like the various resolutions for Bush impeachment, resolutions may not affect the belief of the majority of the legislators. And still, the fact that two states, California and Georgia, have already passed their versions of state sovereignty may be setting the stage for secession down the road if the federal government continues to show its scorn for the Constitution. And the Obama resolution has already passed in the House and is awaiting approval. You know it already passed. So, by God, we're not a constitutional government anymore. Does that surprise anybody?
Oh, I think it probably surprises a lot of people.
A lot of people, but they don't realize that, you know, we are on the verge of, we've lost it all. And under Obama, he's putting this country into trillions of dollars worth of debt, going into illegal wars. I mean, he's just pursuing the whole Bush agenda. I mean, there's no change here. You know, he's as much of a Bushite as anybody, you know. Jesus. I mean, what do we got? A black Bush. Man. That's not a fun thing to think about.
Not at all.
You know, so we don't have any respect for this mess. But anyway, we've got a great interview coming up with Brad Friedman.
He's very articulate, and
yeah.
I think you'll appreciate it.
Yeah, and I'm going to put that up right now. And there's a brief article that Lila has that which kind of introduces Brad, but introduces a serious voter problem that happened, I believe, in Missouri,
what?
If I'm not mistaken. And this is on this. We're going to have this right before the interview with Brad.
That?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So here we go.
We've had Brad Friedman on before, and he's going to bring us up to date on voter fraud and what's happening with Al Franken. And this was on his site, Riverside County, California. With the entire state of California facing a massive budget crisis and most, if not all, of its counties facing shortfalls this year, Riverside County's Registrar of Voters, Barbara Dunmore, is refusing to collect at least $160,000 from the Sequoia voting systems for the cost of manually counting paper trails produced by their touchscreen voting systems last November. California counties which choose to use touchscreen voting systems to serve disabled voters are required to tally all of the so-called paper trails by hand after the elections. The cost for the tally is to be covered by the voting machine company. Election officials are required to conduct the audits. And Dunmore, who has an extraordinary history of failure during her tenure, hasn't bothered to collect the money. Amazing.
Yeah.
And California is in such a horrible state. Is Brad with us?
We get Brad on the phone. Hello, Brad. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you guys?
Great.
We're great. How are you doing?
Oh, we're hanging in there. I got a bit of a cold here, but I'm fighting it off. Other than that, doing okay.
You're out in California, is that correct?
We are, yeah.
Leo got this article off your site. I guess you're in bad financial state out there, but Barbara Dunmore supports those voting machine companies. She wants them to stay solvent, huh?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. As a lot of folks know, California, our new Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen, out here, came into office in 07. She did a landmark study of electronic voting machines, found that they could all be hacked within seconds. Basically, the way she dealt with it was she decertified all of those touchscreen machines and said that you can use them only one per precinct if you want. You have to meet the disability voting standards. They have to have an assistive device like that. She said you can use them if you want, one per precinct, but the paper trails from these machines must be counted by hand, 100%. Now, this woman, Barbara Dunmore, down there in Riverside County, it's amazing. Despite them saying that you have to count these things, when she said you have to count them, she said you have to count them by hand, but you have to charge the voting machine companies for the extra cost since it's their machines that are failing. Well, one county in California, Riverside County, where Barbara Dunmore is a registrar, incredibly, she certified the election in November. We're talking about November's election now. She certified the November election 28 days after the election, as she's supposed to. She certified them as if the results were, quote, true and full and correct. And then she went about counting the paper trails from those touchscreen machines. She had about 72,000 of them. She didn't tell anyone that she hadn't counted them before certifying the election. When we found out a couple of months later, it was almost three full months later that she was still counting these things in secret, she then said, well, I couldn't do it any faster because it would have been too expensive. But the fact is, the Secretary of State said you may charge that to the voting machine companies. You must charge that cost to the voting machine companies. But Barbara Dunmore is refusing to do that. Now, we're talking upwards of $500,000 for the November election alone, and they had two other elections earlier in the year. Mind you, this is while California is facing an enormous budget shortfall, and in Riverside County alone, they're $90 million short on their budget this year, and yet this woman is fighting for the voting machine companies, underscoring again, you know, the problem. The problem between the relationships between the election officials all over the country and the voting machine companies, the vendors, where they're just way too close, they trust them way too much, and in this case, they won't even receive recoup at least $500,000 that should be paid for by the voting machine company. It's a pretty amazing story.
But there's got to be payback somewhere there. There's got to be some reason, and it smells more like money than anything else.
Well, Riverside County was actually the first county in the nation to go all touchscreen voting back in 2000. So they've got a long-time relationship with their vendor, who happens to be Sequoia Voting Systems, one of the top four companies in the nation. They've got a long-time relationship with them. They did not want to get rid of the touchscreens because they love them there, the election officials anyway in Riverside County. They love them. They didn't want to get rid of them at all. And so, you know, when Bowen said you can't use them anymore other than for disabilities voters, they fought that. They even went to court to fight that, and they ended up losing. But, you know, they did not want to go to paper ballots. Fortunately, they were forced to go to paper ballots, but as you can see, they're still playing games and they're still cozying up with the vendors, and that's one of the problems that we have as we're now looking forward in this Obama administration to bringing real election reform to the nation. You know, one of the problems we have is that for years, the voting machine companies have had billions of our dollars that we have given them through the Federal Help America Vote Act, and they've used it to wine and dine these election officials, and, you know, so now you got election officials who say, well, paper ballots, you know, the people, the voters may want paper ballots, but we love our electronic voting. It makes things really easy and fast for us, and so the election officials are fighting hook, line, and sinker against, you know, real election reform in the country, but they're going to lose. We're going to win. It's just a matter of time, frankly, and that's the fight that we're up against now. It's one of the fights that we're up against as we look forward to try to finally clean up this dreadful state of affairs we have in our democracy in the United States.
Do you think that this past presidential election worked better than the previous one, or would you say you have as many complaints or more?
Oh, yeah, we had plenty of complaints, problems, votes flipping all over the place on touchscreen voting machines during the primaries and in the early voting in state after state. There's questions still about a lot of the elections that we had around the country. I mean, the good news is Obama won by enough that we didn't have, a question.
Yeah.
In other words, they would have had to have gamed a whole lot of places in order to accomplish, such a gap between Obama and McCain.
But here's a there's a lot of Obama savvy, computer savvy people out there, and I'm curious if it's so easy to break into these machines. Could Obama's people have easily done it? I mean, it didn't have to necessarily be Republicans.
Sure.
In this one.
Sure, absolutely. Now, in order to do it, the exit polls going into the election had Obama so far up, the pre-election polls and the exit polls on the night up had him so far up that there really would have been no need for him to do it, though there would have been a need for John McCain to do it, but again, it would have drawn a lot of attention, and questions about why the exit polls were so off. Now, we saw that in 2004 where Kerry
won
in the exit polls, but it was still very close, and we were at a different place 4 years ago. I think that
we saw that in New Hampshire with Hillary and Obama.
But there certainly was.
I mean, there was no question in my mind that was rigged for Hillary.
Well, I don't know if it was or if it wasn't. I do know that the polls beforehand and the exit polls on the night of show that Obama should have won that New Hampshire primary.
Right.
And I do know that they use voting systems that are known to be hackable, that we have seen being hacked.
And the guy
the OpScan system up there in New Hampshire. And they never bothered, to actually count ballots before they announced the winner. They just ran them through the old Diebold machines, trusted Diebold, and
the
winner.
But the vendor on that one supposedly was supporting Hillary. Verbally.
I don't know.
Yeah, he publicly came out with was saying that he was voting, he was supporting Hillary.
Well, that wouldn't be a surprise. It was Diebold is a manufacturer. There's a company called LHS that does the distribution and programming and servicing of those Diebold machines pretty much across all of New Hampshire. And this LHS company is a very bad and dirty company.
Right.
Yeah.
So they've admitted, for example, going in during elections and removing memory cards from these machines, something you're never supposed to do, and it's illegal. They've admitted doing it anyway. And these are the sort of folks that we're trusting to run our elections.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It really is.
Amazing. What I just wanted to leap a little bit to the right now. What's the story with Al Franken? What's happening there?
Well, the good news is in the Al Franken issue, there's the election contest is ongoing right there. Former Senator Norm Coleman, the Republican, lost to Al Franken by some 225 votes out of nearly 3 million votes cast. So it's an incredibly close race. A complete hand count of every paper ballot in the state, and we're lucky that the entire state uses paper ballots, a complete hand count happened. Al Franken ended up the winner by 225 points. So Norm Coleman has now gone to court with an election contest, which is his right. But in Minnesota, unlike most states, Minnesota will not send a certificate of election to Congress until all contests are settled. So that's why, had this been other states, they probably would have sent Al Franken to the Senate, swore him in, the election contest would have taken place, and then they would have fought about, if it turns out Norm Coleman actually won, then they would have had to have, Franken would have had to leave, Coleman would have had to come in, and so forth. Minnesota doesn't do that. They let everything get settled first. So they're in the middle of this contest, and it's pretty amazing because Coleman, the Republican here, is arguing for the inclusion of all kinds of rejected absentee ballots, ballots that were rejected because they didn't have a signature, or because someone forged a signature, or they were, you know, deficient in some way. The voter wasn't registered properly, and so on and so forth. They're now arguing to count those ballots. These are Republicans. These are the folks who have been running around for years saying there's massive Democratic voter fraud going on, that you know, Democrats want to count votes when they're not properly signed, when they're not legal, et cetera, et cetera. Well, things have changed up there in Minnesota, because now he's desperate to get in, and he's arguing that everything should be included, even illegally cast ballots. You know, it's amazing. So far, so all of a sudden, they don't care about voter fraud. They don't care about the rule of law. They're just making it up as they go along.
Yeah.
And so far, the court has limited the universe of rejected absentee ballots that may be considered down to about, what are they at now, about 2,000 or so that they want to count. Even if they counted them all, the statisticians tell us it would still be pretty difficult to overcome Franken's lead. But they're fighting to get them all in, and they're taking a real long time doing it. They're calling in, you know, voters, and frankly, if they wanted, they could call in 2,000 voters and have them testify about their ballot. A lot of times, a lot of the voters that called in, this has backfired on them because the voter had to admit, yeah, well, my wife signed it, and so that would be illegal. So that backfired on them, but they could do it. In the meantime, they're stalling, they're delaying, and it means the Democrats have one less vote in the Senate right now when they desperately need it, as you probably know, in order to, you know, overcome these filibuster attempts on just about everything from the Republicans.
How long do you think it'll take to settle this race?
You know what? Anybody who tells you they know is lying, because we really don't. The latest buzz, in any case, out of Minnesota is that it won't be settled until the snow melts and the lawnmowers are out. So we could be looking at a number of months. I'd like to think that, you know, early April at the latest. But it's going to be up to this three-judge panel that's overseeing this contest, how much they, you know, move it along, how much they, you know, force Coleman to get on with it, and how quickly they throw out various categories of ballots to say, no, we're not going to count those. Those won't be counted. So we're looking at anywhere from weeks to months still at this point.
What do you think is happening right now in Illinois with Burris? There's something recently here. This came up today. I saw about the about him supposedly doing fundraising for Blagojevich.
It's a strange story.
Yeah, and that's qualifying him for the Senate now or something.
Well, he has admitted now that he was asked to fundraise for Blagojevich, and he claims that he refused to do it. Now evidence, and this is you know, very early coming forward right now, but evidence is coming forward that he may have done, in fact, some fundraising or tried to do some fundraising on Blagojevich's behalf. And that could be trouble for him if those reports turn out to be true. It's very early. And, you know, prior to this, everyone had talked about Burris being such a clean Marine, but he is a little bit, he's an odd duck, let's just say, and I wouldn't put anything past him, and I'm glad to see some, you know, some investigations by the media. It's nice to see them digging into some of these stories, but as ever, it's troubling that it seems to be the Democratic scandals that they dig into. Meanwhile,
right, not the
Bush administration got a pass for just about everything for 8 years.
No, that's true. And, you know, I don't understand what's going on there, but something about his soliciting his brother, or his brother solicited
him? Brother soliciting him.
Burris, Blagojevich's brother was involved somehow with Burris and so on and so forth. But
yeah, it was apparently these requests for fundraising went through his brother. But as I say, it's still pretty early, and I'm not fully briefed yet on the details and where the investigation is. But it's something to watch out for, and it, you know, even if he stays in there, it may be trouble for him, and it may cause trouble next November,
mm-hmm.
or November 2010, in any case, when he's going to be up for re-election. And frankly, the Democrats, I think, don't need those kind of problems, but they may end up facing them. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why they didn't want Blagojevich to seat anybody, because they wanted to make sure that they had someone in there who would have no problem when they had to run for re-election in a couple of years.
Yeah. I was surprised that, looking ahead at the potential, who's going to be running in 2010, and we're kind of saying if the Republicans will ever make a comeback in that period. What's your opinion on do you think the Republicans will be in power again in the next 10 years?
You know, once again, it's one of those questions. If anybody tells you they know, they're lying, because they don't. We can all make guesses, and, you know, TV pundits love to make predictions. But the fact is, we have no idea what's going to happen.
Well, I'll tell you, 9 years ago,
yeah.
I honestly never thought the Democrats would come back, you know, from 2004.
Right.
2004. I virtually buried them. You know, in 2004, and they proved me right when Kerry conceded, even though he had won the damned election.
Well, you remember, things changed very, very quickly. And, I mean, I'll go back to, what was it, 1990, 91, the first Gulf War. And if you'll recall, that war went off in less than 100 days.
Yeah.
Everyone said George Bush Sr. is unbeatable. It was run so brilliantly. And as a matter of fact, the only reason Bill Clinton even ran in 92 was because, you know, the heavy hitters for the Democrats thought there was no way they could possibly beat George Bush Sr. out of a second term. Well, things changed quickly, and as the economy changed back then, Bush was held accountable for that. He also ticked off his base, as you recall, by breaking his no new taxes pledge. So things can change in a heartbeat. Anybody who tells you that, Obama is so popular, the Democrats are so popular, nothing could possibly go wrong, well, think again. And at the same time, people who think that the Republicans are going to have a field day in opposition to Obama, well, you know, we just don't know. I think events are going to...
I tell you, from right now, from what it seems like, Obama's got a 100-day term.
They came out at him right out of the box.
Yeah,
it's extraordinary how
it
worked. You could count the length of his honeymoon in hours, I think, rather than days. He didn't even get the first 100 days.
No.
He had been out of the box, and interestingly, the White House press corps has suddenly awoken from their slumber of 8 years just in time for Obama to come into the White House. And again, I'm happy to see him showing up to play. I'm happy to see him going after Obama, going after anybody, you know, Democrats, Republicans. If there are corrupt officials out there, go after them. Ask them the tough questions. That's their job. That's our job in the media. I'm still having a difficult time explaining where the hell these people have been for 8 years and why they still don't seem to give a damn about all the transgressions that took place during the Bush administration. And transgressions is a nice word. Crimes that took place during the Bush administration. War crimes that took place during the Bush administration that need to be prosecuted to the highest level.
Oh, we agree with you fully.
Yeah.
They've been given a pass. I don't like it.
You know where they are is they don't want to drag that up because they didn't cover it. You know?
But you're right. You make a good point. Because if they bring it up now, the additional question will be, well, you know, why the hell weren't you doing this years ago?
Yeah. I mean, you were so high and mighty when you toppled Nixon, all right? And then you went after Carter and you went after everybody else. But, I mean, this Obama, you gave him a free ride, all right, right up until the election. And then within a week, you know, they're starting to cut him off at the knees, you know. It's really...
And they gave Bush a pass.
They gave Bush an 8-year pass. You know, it's just amazing to me.
Yeah, and yet, if you listen to the wing nuts and if you listen to the crazy folks on Fox News, they'll still tell you, oh, that's because we have a liberal media.
Oh, yeah, the liberal media. Blame the liberal media.
Where the hell is that liberal media?
Oh, man, I don't know.
It exists. It's unbelievable. It really is.
It's absurd.
The thing that I find absurd is they sort of blame Obama for Bush's last 2 years. Where, you know, we hardly saw Bush, and he kind of gets blamed for all of Bush's mistakes on Fox News.
Right.
They seem to kind of forget that Bush was president.
Right. That's right. They're going to do anything they can over at Fox News to make sure that Obama owns
all of
the Iraq, Afghanistan, anything they can do. That's what they do. I mean, it's not a news organization.
Well, they already said it. Somebody, I think it was Pat Buchanan or one of them on MSNBC recently said that, within 6 weeks, Obama's got 6 months. After 6 months, everything is his. it's all his. And then they had some Republican strategist there. They said, it's all his after 6 months. The war, the stimulus package, the economic disaster, it's all his. And they said, he was taking it on himself and saying, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. Well, he says he can have it. It's all his. In 6 months, no one's going to remember Bush. No one's going to remember the Republican politics, the Republicans who gave us $1 trillion deficit. It's all going to be on him. And these were the Republicans talking. You know what I mean?
Well, sure. Well, of course. You recall when Bush came in 2000 and anybody asked questions about it, we were told Bush won, get over it. Same thing happened in 2004. Bush won, get over it.
Yeah.
Now they're going to say, well, it's Obama's problem. If you have concerns about what happened with Bush, he got out, get over it. You have to get over anything that has to do with Republicans.
I'm surprised.
Democrats are always fair game.
Have you heard of any gatherings down in Crawford or any gatherings down in his new digs in Dallas? Any protests?
I have not, but I do know that folks are. Karl Rove recently spoke, and there was protests going on. Bush has been hiding out for the most part. He will be doing a speech somewhere. It's out of the country. I forget where it is. It's not here. I do suspect.
Some place they don't wear shoes.
Exactly. Please leave your shoes at the door.
Leave your shoes.
I do suspect that when Bush shows up, when Rove shows up, when Gonzalez shows up, no matter where they are, for a long time, there's going to be protesters. There's going to be folks making noise and trying to fling shoes, if not feces. So it's going
to
be interesting what happens in the years ahead. And we are going to have to hold the Obama administration accountable if they don't do the right thing and bring charges to what went on during the Bush administration. And there's a lot of signs that say they would rather move on and not have to deal with that. On the other hand, you got folks like John Conyers, who is clearly not done with the Bush administration, is still fighting to bring in Karl Rove. There's another subpoena for him now outstanding for next Monday.
Oh, really?
On the House Judiciary Committee, because Rove needs to show up. If not, he may be going to jail.
Wow, that would be great.
The media didn't cover that plane crash either.
McDonnell, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you knew about that, right?
Of Mike Connell.
Yeah. Mike Connell, right.
Who had testified just the day before the election. He was forced to testify about shenanigans that he carried out or may have carried out in 2004. And then a few days later, in mid-December, he goes down in a single-engine plane crash.
Yeah.
Under curious circumstances, for sure. We've been covering it quite a bit at Brad Blog. And a lot of questions, and still apparently a lot of need for independent media like me and you and so many folks who are willing to report on what is actually news rather than run around and do packed journalism,
right,
and follow the story of the day as we see so many news outlets doing.
I agree with
that. That was very convenient, that plane crash. Those single engine small plane crashes are just so convenient for
murder.
Yeah.
And there will be, I promise more on that right now. I know the attorney who had the original lawsuit concerning 2004 that brought in Connell. He's working on some new motions that he's going to be filing shortly in Ohio. Cliff Arnbeck is his name.
Hmm.
So you will have more to look forward in.
O'Connell, what was his name? McConnell?
Mike Connell.
Mike Connell.
Yeah.
O'Connell was also involved with the missing White House emails, wasn't he?
That's exactly right, yeah. It was his company. His company ran all of these right-wing Republican websites. They ran the election night reporting websites for the Secretary of State of Ohio in 2004. They ran the Swift Boat operation, and they also, ran the White House email, the White House email that's disappeared on their servers as well. Their hands were everywhere, and this is one of the reasons why They were able to get the judge in this case to allow, to demand, frankly, to compel Connell to testify. And it was just the Friday before the election, and Arnbeck, the attorney, made the case that, look, they may do this again next Tuesday. We need to bring this guy in to testify ASAP, and the judge went ahead and ordered that he come in on that Monday prior to the election. A lot of folks in Ohio say that it was because of that signal that was sent that, hey, there's somebody looking this time, that the GOP did not try the same sort of shenanigans they pulled off in 2004.
But he did testify, and it's all in transcript, and it's all been recorded.
He did, although much of it is sealed right now. There was two points on which they were allowed to seal that transcript, and I've been fighting to see if we can unseal some of it now that Mike Connell is dead. But he got permission, they got permission, his attorneys got permission to seal information that had to do with trade secrets of his company and with the threats, allegedly, that he received from Karl Rove when it looked like when he was giving signals that he was going to testify. Suddenly he started getting threats from Karl Rove, allegedly, against he and his wife.
Wow.
That material was also sealed. So
now why was that sealed?
It's at the request of the attorneys.
Wow.
Now, you know, they claim that they that there were no threats, and yet that material had to be sealed.
Yeah, that's
so. To explain that one, I'm trying to get to the heart of it, and so we'll see if we can get the judge, hopefully, to unseal that that entire testimony now that McConnell has died.
So tell us, Brett, with a hopeful tone. Do you think we'll have reasonably fair elections in 2010?
You know, no, we won't, and the reason we won't is because we still have an election system that is not transparent, that the citizens cannot oversee. We are still relying on computers that use secret software and vendors who have proprietary trade secrets to tell us who won and who lost every election. Until every citizen is able to vote on a hand-marked piece of paper, and every citizen is able to count those ballots for themselves if they want, there are really no reason to trust election results. It's just it's faith-based elections. That's why we've got to fight to reform the system to make sure, when it comes to our democracy, that it is 100% transparent. That makes it real hard, then, for the bad guys to get away with anything. So until we have that, yeah, there's all sorts of opportunities for chicanery in 2010 and beyond, but there are some election reform bills that are just now being filed that may make a difference for 2010, unless they get blocked again, as they have been blocked for the last 8 years.
Now, one more question. I know you wanted to mention it, but we're very curious. Was about the Ann Coulter election.
Ann Coulter, voter fraud queen.
Isn't that wonderful?
You may recall that she committed voter fraud down in the state of Florida. She signed a false address on her voter registration form. She then voted at the wrong precinct. A third-degree felony and a first-degree misdemeanor. She got off the hook from those charges when her boyfriend, her former boyfriend at the FBI, called the Palm Beach County Sheriff, told him to drop the charges. She had to lie about her address because she has a stalker. And this stalker, he actually named, and the guy's not a stalker, but he named this guy who happens to be, guess who? A Brad Blog guest blogger.
Oh.
Yeah.
How convenient is that, huh?
What's that?
How convenient is that?
Very convenient. Well, this guy is certainly not a stalker. What the FBI did there was unbelievable, but hey, it's the state of Florida. They'll get away with anything they can. In the meantime, new charges have now come up. It appears that prior to moving to Florida, Ann Coulter was living in New York and yet voting in Connecticut by absentee, which would be illegal since she had residence in New York. So in 2002 and 2004, she voted illegally by absentee. When the story came out, the Connecticut Election Commission said, well, if somebody files a formal complaint, we'll be happy to investigate it. Well, guess who filed a formal complaint? Our old friend, the stalker, from Bradblock, Dan Borchers, filed his formal complaint, and last week the Connecticut Elections Commission announced that there is now an official investigation underway into Ann Coulter's voter fraud in Connecticut. I can only hope the election commission there won't be quite as friendly to her as the folks were down in Florida.
Now, did she vote? Did she vote in all three states by any chance?
Not at the same time, as far as we know. But hopefully that's what the investigation will find out. Right now, our only record of her voting in 02 and 04 was in Connecticut, but she had been living for years in New York at that time. So it would have been illegal for her to vote absentee in the state of Connecticut. And this, you know, it seems like a small thing, but the fact is Republicans for years have been using the straw man of voter fraud, claiming that Democrats are committing voter fraud in order to try to push this photo ID nonsense, these photo ID restrictions at the polling place, knowing that anywhere from 20 to 30 million legal American voters don't have that kind of photo ID. They would be disenfranchised, and they also happen to be a group that votes overwhelmingly Democratic. We're talking about at the elderly, minorities, college students. These are the folks who wouldn't have the type of IDs that the Republicans are pushing for based on the phony notion that there's all kinds of voter fraud going on. And in the meantime, the queen of the GOP herself has now certainly committed voter fraud down in Florida, and now it appears likely in Connecticut as well.
What could the possible
but, you know, hypocrisy that...
Okay. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to turn this tape over. We still got a few more minutes on this tape. I'll be right there.
$5,000 fine. I'm not sure what the charges are up in Connecticut yet, but I hope to find out soon.
And it's a felony, so in some states she wouldn't be able to vote.
That's right. Wouldn't that be a pity?
Wouldn't that be sad? Huh? I like that part.
Well, Brad, I know you got to go, and I know you got a conference call coming up, but I wanted to thank you very much for being on tonight, and we appreciate the work you're doing, and we express our congratulations to you, and we hope that everybody goes to bradblock.com. Checks out all of your updates
and keep working for those transparent elections.
And get on Brad's mailing list and have him send you some the updates and so on.
Well, bless you guys. Thank you very much. I'll keep working on transparent elections as long as you do as well, because we're all in this mess together. So thanks for the kind words and for all you guys do.
All right,
thank you, Brad. Good luck.
Love you too.
Bye-bye.
That was Brad Friedman talking to us from California. He's about to go on a conference call. We're really glad that he was able to come on our show, because he's always full of information, and I'm so glad he's working on transparent elections. We so much need that to have fair process.
If you wondered where why the last two nights we haven't had John Brennan on.
He's on vacation.
He's on vacation.
Okay, I want to thank everybody for listening. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Brad Friedman. Tomorrow night we are going to be discussing, I think we're going to return to our book, the Nothing in This Book is True, but It's Exactly How Things Are. And we're going to continue our discussion on that, I believe, talking about the Merkaba and talking about transcendence of consciousness to the fourth and further on dimensions. And also we'll be talking about Melchizedek and a number of other issues. Fascinating stuff. So metaphysics tomorrow night and spirituality. And on Friday night we'll have George Dixon. So please stay tuned tomorrow night and Friday. Same time, same place, 8 o'clock, 8 to 9. So thanks for listening, and have a pleasant evening. Good night.